Welcome. This is Tar Heel 24/7, a UNC basketball podcast. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the Tar Heel 24/7 on YouTube. Subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're on it. And without further ado, we've got some big news to talk about. We're going to welcome in Tar Heel 24/7 lead insider Andrew Jones.
What's up, man?
Busy day, busy night. Like, you know, so let's get into it. How has your last 24 hours been?
Exciting.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like to see what happens happen. I mean, I really like Hubert, and I think it's a sad and exciting time for Carolina basketball, which we can get into. But at the same time, when those journalistic juices start flowing, it's pretty exciting. And just to see how things play out and the information, people's reactions, it's always really interesting. And I think one of the things that's been reinforced with this, John, is just how massive and how passionate the Carolina fan base is. And their opinions are so strong for and against what has happened. But I think they're all united and excited about what's to come next. So it's been very interesting. It's been a grind, but the grind is also the reward. Yeah. As you know, being a big time athlete, you understand the grind is the reward.
Yeah, you know, out after five seasons, overall record 125-54, coast to fourth most games of any coach behind Dean Roy and Frank McGuire. So this is kind of uncharted territory we're entering in. I'm glad you said sad but excited. I was on the HQ today, and I said the same thing. Like, you know, you're sad because I know Hubert personally. I know his family. Like, he's a close friend of mine. Yeah. You know, so it's sad to see him go. But also, I also know Hubert, and I've seen Hubert from just even being an ESPN to the day he started being an assistant. I'm happy that. You know, yes, he wanted to be the coach, and I don't think he wanted to leave, and he wanted to lead his university, but I think a weight is off his shoulder. I don't think Hubert looked like himself the last 8 months, just for me personally knowing him and his demeanor and who he is as a person. Yeah. I think this was weighing heavy on him, the stress of the job, the stress of expectations.
100%. In fact, I'll send you a text after we're done with this to show you these two photos. I was in Getty Images the other day looking at for photos of Hubert, and next to two photos next to each other, one was his introductory press conference, and then one was last Wednesday in Greenville. He looked 12 years older, and it actually hurt my heart. It was sad because he's put so much into it, and you could see. I think it really illustrates how big the job is. Coaching basketball at North Carolina is not just X's and O's. It's not just smacking a guy in the fanny and saying, hey, go out and play your heart out. There's so much else that goes into it. And I agree with you. I think the wear and tear on him the last several months especially has been quite evident. The press conference last Thursday wasn't the first time he's done that. But he did it on a stage that everybody noticed. And he was mocked the next day for it. It was a bad, bad look. And I think it reflected what you just said, just kind of over time, it was just so much. And he gave it 5 years. He gets to walk away with some incredible stuff, John. No one could ever take beating Kay in his last home game in that Final Four win. No one could ever take that away from him. And I hope in time, sooner rather than later, he understands that and he recognizes that he is still as much a part of the family now as he's ever been. I just know that there's a lot, he's upset. I know there's some anger perhaps that needs to settle, but in time he's going to be so embraced in the family and people are going to respect what he did. And he did a lot of good things. It's just, this is North Carolina. It's a different animal. Most other schools, they would give him a 5-year extension. In North Carolina, it's just different. And it's different for a good reason. You're one of the reasons why, because of what you guys did. You guys had to perform at a different level than maybe guys at other schools in the ACC would have to perform. That's just part of the standard. And when you signed to play for Roy, you understood what you were getting into, and you dealt with it. So it's a different animal, and it's a different animal for a good reason. And they're going to end up, I think, getting an upgrade moving forward, especially with the names that we're hearing.
I think you brought up a good point. When I was there, the pressure is, we embraced it. Like, we knew, I kid you not, I always laugh. Maybe my freshman year, but like my last 2 years, I don't think we ever played a game where we weren't favored.
Yeah. Right?
So we were expected to be undefeated. Obviously, that's not possible, but that's what literally comes with playing, and you embrace it. And now I will say we didn't have the social media noise. We had Facebook. And in Facebook, once you get a certain amount of friends, you can't even add anymore. And people weren't really, you know, like it was just different now.
Yeah, I remember that.
And comments. And so the noise was a little less, but I would say when you lost a game or you weren't playing well or something happened, you could, it reverberated through through the town, through the city. So I know the feeling of, you know, we went to the NIT that year and Coach Williams literally was like, hey, look, we're going to do something different this offseason than we've ever done before because this is not happening again. And yeah. And that season weighed on him tremendously. Yeah. And it weighed on him. And he was talking about, hey, look, man, this might be my last couple of years. Obviously, we turned it around. But it's super interesting to just kind of think, you know, even with Coach Davis, you know, where do you think that – do you think the VCU was the final straw or it was like second weekend or bust? What do you think?
I think they kind of needed VCU to happen to make this happen.
Yeah.
So the tea leaves were what they were beforehand. I've said this multiple times. I don't know if I've told you this. Maybe I have. But in conversations with people who matter, who make these decisions, we had been, a few of us who had some of these meetings off the record for the last few years have been told, mm-hmm. we see what you guys see.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look at the record, and I've been saying this the last week or so people get can really get a good visual. From a 30,000 foot view, it looks pretty good. But when you get closer and you start to see, okay, well, how did they get to those records? What took place in the process? And it doesn't look as good. And that's where that comment comes from. We see what you guys see. So what the VCU game gave them, quite honestly, was 14 minutes and 58 seconds of all the bad stuff for the first 5 years. Just all came out. And I hate to say it because I really, really like Hubert personally. He's a wonderful guy. You know him really well. He's a really, really genuine, legitimate guy. But he froze. He froze in that moment, John, and there's no way you can recover from that. So he kind of gave them the out to go ahead and make this happen now. Do it now. Don't wait any longer. Now, they did give him opportunities. They did give him an opportunity to write down some things about what he would do different in the program. But Hubert is also stubborn, and Hubert can be defiant at times. I know that they had made multiple suggestions to him about how he can maybe do press conferences a little bit different, and he just did it the Hubert way. So in the end, he kind of went out doing it the Hubert way, and it wasn't enough. But that last game put it was on a silver platter for everybody because the Caleb excuse didn't matter. They built a 19-point lead without Caleb. They played with Duke into the second half without Caleb. They got out to a good start against Clemson without Caleb. It's when Duke punched, it's when Clemson punched, and it's when VCU punched, they didn't punch back. And that goes on the head coach. And that ultimately was the final straw.
Yeah, I think you know, I hate to bring Duke into the chat, but during the VCU game, just from a, you know, outward perspective, Hill Jr.'s killing you. He's killing you. And you as a staff, as a coach, you have to either game plan for it so we have different schemes, or you switch up the coverage. And I personally was frustrated, and this could have been any team. This could have been Syracuse, Clemson. It was frustrating to watch just from a former player, just from just played the game. While you keep switching Jaren Stevenson on him, Jaren Stevenson can't guard him, right? Jaren Stevenson, 6'10", he can guard a perimeter, but he can't guard him. And they were switched over and over and over. And then you look up, he's got 34 points.
Yeah.
And then you watch the Duke and Siena game. They're down 10 at the half. Coach Shire puts his pride and ego to the side and says, I know I've got these awesome guys, but they can't guard. Let's go to his zone. Yeah. Can't guard. And so things like that I watch with different coaches make adjustments. It's like, hey, look, may not be what you want to do, or it may be a pride thing, but hey, look, like if most times when teams are rolling, team switched back into his own, maybe coming out of timeout switched up. So there's a lot of tactical things in that game that, like you said, just served it up. It was kind of just a synopsis of the whole term of just like, hey, look, like adjustments. And I think I'm not blaming that on Coach Davis. I think that is a whole staff thing, right? Like, you know, everyone needs to kind of look in the mirror and say, hey, look, like, and you never know, right? You say coach is stubborn, right? Maybe it was adjusting. He's like, look, no, we're gonna keep doing what we're doing. So it's interesting, but yeah, that I think the VCU was kind of, you're right. That was a good point. Like, hey, look, it was a bleed out, and that was the final straw.
And you know, when they actually started switching more as the runs started to accumulate.
Yep.
Because they were not switching a lot early. They were going under the screens to cut off the drive. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why he went to that. It was perplexing because some of us on Press Row I actually pointed out to the person sitting next to me, a young writer, and I said, they're going to set up a drive on Jaren. And they got the matchup you just talked about, and he went right to the rim. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Jaren was exhausted because Jaren was playing his ass off.
Yes.
And that was one of his best floor games he's played, and he was going through stuff. But as he started getting tired, he started bouncing off guys instead of going through them. Mm-hmm. And that showed itself on those drives. He's not the right guy to defend that to begin with. But then when he's exhausted, he's even more so not the right guy. And they kept going to it and kept going to it. And I was really surprised they didn't change. And I was courtside for that Duke game you're talking about. Yeah. They were getting run out, man.
Yeah.
Shire said, I'm going to. And that's like the best defensive team I've seen a person in years. Yes. I've seen Duke this year. And Shire's like, you know what? We got to switch. We got to change
something up. Yeah, we got to change something up. And so I think that was, if I had any kind of synopsis of kind of this, of Coach Davis, like, hey, look, like adjustments came a little too late. Or, you know, it's also like a professional athlete thing, too, man. Like, I feel like, you know, even for me sometimes, I'm like, look, this is how I got here. I'm sticking with my guns.
Yeah.
And that happens that's just how it is being a high level athlete. Sometimes you have this pride for one, this stubbornness. Like Coach Davis probably got to the pinnacle of his career by saying, you know what? I'm going to leave ESPN. I'm going to do this my way. So that could have been maybe his downfall in the end.
He had success. Mm-hmm. I think for a while, people are going to remember VCU and everything that came with it. But over time, I think they're going to look at some of the other stuff. And there were times when they switched really well. Switching is, it's interesting. I should probably send you the quote, but a very good friend of mine covered the NBA for a long time, and he was covering the Portland Trail Blazers. And the head coach at the time, Nate McMillan, brought him in to his office, and they were talking about their defense because he wanted to write a piece about how NBA teams defend as opposed to college, right? Because there are stark differences. Yeah. And one of the things that Nate said is, I don't believe in switching. And he showed him examples why, because switching gives you a false sense of security on defense. And you can never have that because your head has to be on a swivel and you have to be on high alert all the time. And when he watched the Clemson game, after the Clemson game in the ACC tournament, he sent me that quote from Nate McMillan. And I thought that was interesting. The quote's like 12, 15 years old or something like that, but it still applies to switching. And I said, you know, that's the one thing I've never understood about Hubert switches is that sometimes they're so loose that the ball could be on the left wing and a couple players on the right wing on offensively just kind of replace each other a little bit, but they're not really doing anything much in the set. And Carolina would switch that when there was no need to do it. And those were stretches when they were getting gashed. And Clemson was attacking. They were blitzing those switches during that time. And I do think it leads to a false sense of security. If you switch and replace or recover quickly, that's different. You can really throw a team off. I think that was probably Hubert's intent. They just didn't execute it well. I'm not sure they had the athletic personnel to do that as well. If you're not super bouncy, it's a little harder to do that. And just teams got a beat on it. SMU got a beat on it. Andy Enfield after the game said, we attacked their switches. When they were at Cal, Mark Madsen said, we attacked their switches. But it didn't register. They kept doing the same thing too often. Whenever they did it and a team was able to exploit it, they lost those games.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, from my playing experience, switching is not something that you – plan on doing, at least the best teams I've been on. You don't plan on switching. You switch. So for instance, I'll give you an example for the folks at home. Come to the game. Okay. Five names on the board. Henson, Zeller, you're switching 4-5. That's it. You're not switching 1-3. Or, hey, look, Harrison, Dex, you're switching to 2-3. Like, it was always specific switches. It wasn't we switch. It was like, hey, look, if these two guys come together, you can switch this. If not, we're in cover. So I felt like with Carolina, like you said, it was kind of like, switch. So
everything switch, yeah.
Like, you know, it's got to be a little more specific. Like, even on that, when you talk about how they just switch when they didn't need to switch, right?
Yeah.
That would be something you say, hey, look, no, you're getting through that. We're switching on certain pick and rolls. So, like, switching has to be specific because in college, I'm sure as you see, switching is a what's the word I'm trying to look for? It's a cop-out.
You give the offense an advantage. You know, when – correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding with Roy hated switching. But he gave you guys, especially the older team, maybe in 2010 you didn't have this, but you did in 11 and 12, he gave you the liberty that when you thought a switch was necessary, he gave you the freedom to make that switch occasionally. But by and large, he wanted everybody to be Wes Miller and go over top of the screen as an example. Well, didn't he give you guys a little bit of freedom there?
Yeah. So for me and Z, depending, B and Z were interchangeable defensively. So what me and Z would do is, depending on what happened, I got the first big. If I'm getting rebounds, Z's down there, he's got the first big. That was our switch. There wasn't anything else. So that was, I guess we did kind of switch, but not really, right? Like, you know, and then on the perimeter, for the most part, we didn't really switch. But also, I will say this, guard on guard screen and roll wasn't a thing when I was in school.
Yeah.
We would have probably had the game plan a little different. The three setting the screen for, like, even with Harrison, now we had the defensive chops per se, but also we would put Kendall on the two, maybe even Kendall on the three, because Kendall had size. So it was a little different, but yeah, Coach Williams, not a switching guy. He would actually get upset if you switched because it was easy. If you switch because you had to, cool, but if you switch because it was easy, you're in trouble. So,
you know, it's interesting. I had a press conference of his pop up on our, like, the notifications on our channel about 2 weeks ago, and I watched it, and they lost to Pitt. And Pitt was really good when they had good talented guards at exploiting the switches. Mm-hmm. And he went off for a minute and a half about a switch that occurred that shouldn't have. For a minute and a half in the press conference about one switch. And you know what I'm talking about. You've heard it from him before. Yeah. And I thought that was – it's almost like it was a blessing that I got to see that from him, because we've talked so much about switching with Hubert, and it really kind of brought home – where there's various ways you can switch. There's various degrees of it, which you already talked about, and when Roy kind of hit on in that press conference, and then where it's just everything. And too often it was everything. And there's some guys on this team that, quite frankly, maybe should have been in a zone a little bit more. I liked it when they went long. A zone could have been – if you put someone like put Jonathan Powell at the top of like a 1-2-2. Something like that. I mean, you could have really thrown some people off. You know, when they won the title in 93, when Dean's second title, he went 1-3-1 against Michigan with George Lynch as the back of that zone, just roaming that baseline. He caused all kinds of problems for Michigan that night. And Dean was a man-to-man guy, but he also understood sometimes you've got to change it up and you've got to go attack their strengths with something different than what you normally do. And it won him a national championship. So if Dean can do it, I would think anybody can do it.
Yeah, I was looking at the defensive rating. So we were number 5 my sophomore year, and then we were, I think, 11 my junior year. So we had pretty good defense. That's pretty interesting.
That's what the Florida State game factored in there.
Yeah, no, I'm just like, it's kind of, I'm looking at it like, okay, well, we played a little defense. All right, let's
see. You guys kept people in front of you.
Yeah. Like I said, like,
in front of you were really good.
Reggie could guard.
Yeah.
Obviously, Kendall wasn't necessarily the best defender, but he was 6'5", right? Dexter could guard. Obviously, Harris can guard. I was defensive guy. And Z was a stout post defender. So we had some defensive chops.
You and Z, your rotations defensively down low to help as rim protectors was elite.
Yeah, I had to yell at them. I got through their heads week two. I'm like, listen, if he's coming to the lane, don't foul, or I'm gonna foul you at halftime. So that seemed the message. Also, if you like what you're hearing, make sure to get the latest on the coaching search and transfer portal updates as the window opens on April 7th by subscribing to Tario 24/7. The message boards are on fire. You definitely want to know what's going on as it's happening. That's TarHill247.com for all the latest on Carolina hoops. So moving on to the coaches search, right? Pivotal moment, Carolina history. There's so much at stake with this hire. They have to get it right. They have to get it right.
Yeah.
Like it's for this fresh reset, new coach, new era. Talk to me, because if Carolina doesn't get this right, the lore diminishes even more. So talk to me about that search and how much pressure is on the administration, and what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, if you look at the positive side of Hubert, you have five straight 20-win seasons, four NCAA tournament appearances, two Sweet 16s, all that kind of stuff that his defenders will put out there first, and they're real. They're there. You can't take that away. So if you're going to move on from someone like that who is also a prominent member of your family, you've got to make the right hire. You've got to hire somebody that immediately hoists Carolina into where Duke is perceived right now. Into that, they have to be a top five program overnight, basically. So that's a challenge, because to me, the candidates that we're hearing about, they're either a guy who has been out of college for a while and been in the NBA, who was amazing when he was in college and has had some success in the NBA. He could come back and would be an interesting hire, be an older guy, someone who could probably handle the seat, and that's Billy Donovan. Ooh. Or you're talking about, let's say, someone like Dusty May, who it looks like a great coach, not a good coach, but a great coach, but he was in Florida Atlantic this time 3 years ago. That's a massive, massive jump, and you're talking about being able to handle the seat. Tommy Lloyd's been a head coach for 5 years, but he was an assistant under Mark Few at Gonzaga for 20 years, and you know that Roy and Mark Few are good buddies. And there's a little connection there.
And I was actually in the studio with Dan Dickow, and Tommy Lloyd never really wanted to be a head coach, but when Arizona called, he couldn't turn it down. So he's just starting his journey as well.
And Dickow played for him. He was assistant when Dickow. Yep. Well, you know, Hubert was like that.
Mm-hmm.
Hubert wasn't thinking head coach, and then Roy went to him, and he's like, that's why the whole act of service thing was such an important message that he gave. Like, this was an act of service, and I think people thought he was going to step aside quicker, more easily than he did, because the act of service thing. So they're gonna have to get somebody that can handle sitting in that seat, John. And not everybody can do it. There's a lot of wonderful coaches out there that don't belong at North Carolina. So they're tasked with finding out the combination of really good coach, can handle the modern player, understands the way things are now. If it's Billy Donovan, there's been like three renovations of college basketball since he left. It's changed so much. But he could probably handle that seat, right? So maybe he can adapt. Or maybe Tommy Lloyd, having worked under a guy like Few, who literally turned a program into a second-tier blue blood, basically, right in front of him, and he was a part of it, maybe he's got everything that it takes. They won't know until they go through this process, but they're in the process, and they've been reaching out for a few days and getting gauges on people. I don't think the list right now is that extensive. I think they have a pretty good idea of what their window is of some guys that are kind of fit in the circle, and it's not a bunch of names. So they're gonna get someone. It may depend on when this coach's team stops playing in the NCAA tournament, because the national title game is in 12 days.
Yeah,
so it's still a long time. The portal opens up the next day. So ideally, with a lot of players that can return, to have eligibility return on the current roster, you'd like to have someone that comes in and can get to know them a little bit and get an idea. Okay, well, we want this guy to stay. Maybe we don't want that guy. So when the portal opens, they have to know, A, what their needs are in the portal, B, how much they're going to have to spend in the portal. That's going to take more than a couple of days. So ideally for Carolina, you get somebody in within the next week or so. So they have about a week before the portal opens to really kind of pin their ears back and go after what their needs are.
Man, it's so crazy. You're saying, like, you know, what they need and what they don't. Like, I would have been devastated if, like, I went in the coaching room's office. It's like, listen, man, we're gonna terminate it. Like, we don't want you back. Like, I would have been devastated. Like, just knowing my college experience and my guys and my brothers. So that is, I still can't wrap my head around that. You know.
Yeah, it's hard for me too, and I've been around it up close for 5 years now, and it's still very difficult for me. One of the things I always enjoyed about covering you guys was just kind of slowly getting to know you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing you grow from your freshman year. Remember when Roy had you out playing the three and
yep.
you were kind of struggling with some things. Then by the time you left, you were a man. I mean, you could interview us, right?
Yeah.
And I love that stuff. And you don't see it as much now. And I think sometimes kids are missing some of that aspect of growth, and the program is missing it in them, so they misread them. Mm-hmm. That's why you see a lot of dudes change programs, and they're really good somewhere else. Because that fresh start kind of allows certain things in them to bloom that maybe wasn't happening at the previous stop. So I don't like that part of it, but it is the way things are. That's what the players wanted. That's what the players have now. And whoever they bring in, hopefully they'll have some time to get to know Jaron, to get to know Derek. There's some really, really good kids on this roster. This is one of the best rosters I've dealt with as far as good dudes go. Mm-hmm. And some pretty good players who can help you win. So hopefully there'll be enough time where they can allow these kids to make good decisions for themselves and also give the new head coach and his staff enough time to make good decisions for the program.
Yeah, and it takes time. I mean, look at some of the guys that have left, you know, Cade and Elliot. It's like, you know, if it was the old days, right, they're coming into their junior year, they had a rough year, and all of a sudden they blossom, right? Like, so it's super interesting to see, like, when guys leave. And we've had even Jalen at Vanderbilt. I mean, I watched Vandy play. I'm like, who is this guy? Hitting jumpers, yelling, dunking on cats. So it's almost like we prepared him for the other side. I'm kind of mad, actually, you know?
Yeah, that was part of the one person called it an indictment. I wouldn't go so far as saying it's an indictment, because guys came in that flourished. Look at Cormac Ryan. Cormac Ryan scored a bucket the other night for the Bucks, I think. And I don't think that ever would have happened without his year in Chapel Hill. Yeah. I think he's with the Bucks. Is he with the Bucks?
Yeah, I think he's with the Bucks.
Yeah. And that wouldn't have happened without a year in Chapel Hill. Brady Manick is the 14th all-time leading scorer at Oklahoma. And he's a beloved Tar Heel, which is kind of cool. And that, by the way, is an example that you can go outside the family and a guy can become a Tar Heel. He could become a part of the family overnight. If Brady Manick can be that and be loved forever, then a head coach can too, especially if they win. So that's why the family stuff really is not an issue to the people I'm talking about when they look at who the next head coach will be. They're not looking at anybody in the family because there is nobody left in the family. But they're kind of excited to break free because – look, when you came out of Tampa, you were not a Tar Heel until you showed up, right?
Yeah.
So then you became a Tar Heel. So you weren't born a Tar Heel, but you became a Tar Heel, and you are one for life now. That's kind of what family is. Family isn't just from birth. Family can come in a lot of different ways, and that's the way they're looking at this. That's the way they're going to pitch it, and they're going to find plenty of people that want that job because it is, I think you can argue, it's the best job in college basketball.
Yeah, I was thinking, and maybe you can, you know, kind of tell me how you feel about this. I think even whoever comes in, the part of the interview process or what, can you bridge this gap, right? Can you keep the old, bridge in the new, and combine it as one? And so I personally think there's still going to be a lot of people around that were with Hubert's staff. I don't necessarily know about coaches, but I do think, like, maybe some of the front, you know, office guys and staffers that are around. I think some guys are going to stay personally. What do you kind of think?
I think they should, don't you? Don't you think they should?
Yeah, I agree. No, I'm listening. Like, you know, a guy like
Eric Hoots.
Yeah.
The next coach has to keep Eric Hoots around. Don't you think so?
I mean, that's already been infused through everyone. Like, everyone's kind of, hey, listen, man, you know, people are calling on behalf of him because he is kind of the leader of the old guys. And so he keeps us up to date. He keeps us in the loop. And you know, so I think Hoots is going to probably have to stay. I hate to say have to stay, but it would be an uproar.
I would say have to.
It'd be an uproar.
As a former player, maybe you can't say that, but in my position, I can say, I think he has to stay. And I think that goes to what you just asked me about bridging the gap.
Yeah.
You want to bridge the gap? Don't just keep some Carolina guys because you're keeping Carolina guys. Keep them because you think they're good for the staff. Sean May has gotten so much better as a coach.
Yeah.
I watch him working with guys doing big man stuff, and he's gotten a lot better. Maybe Sean's someone you keep. Marcus Paige, if you look at the staff right now, Marcus may have the most potential to be a head coach someday.
Yep.
And Marcus might be someone you keep on the staff. Doug Halverson, the trainer, he's been around forever. Keep him on the staff. I don't know what they think about Jonas Serration. Jonas has been around. Jonas was there when you were there, right?
Yeah, Jonas is my guy.
Yeah, Jonas is awesome. Jonas is a part of Carolina basketball that most people don't know who he is, but that's part of the infrastructure that you keep it whole while also becoming new and fresh. And I think that can be done. I don't know. Some head coaches don't want to do that. They want to be their own. When Matt Doherty came in, he's like, I'm going to do my own thing. And that was one of the biggest mistakes he made because he ruffled feathers as soon as he walked in the door. And I'm sure you've heard the stories. It never really changed.
Yep.
I think being a head coach at a place like North Carolina, at a place like Kentucky or Kansas, it's a political job as well. There's a political nature to it. And doing what we're talking about is part of the political aspect of that. And quite frankly, if you're Billy Donovan, for the sake of discussion, he is plenty good enough as a head coach to have a couple of those people on the staff and still excel just the same and have some new people in as well.
Yeah. Like I said, if you want to keep that family environment, I think that's going to be a big thing for the new coach. So I guess we'll see what happens. Obviously, it's going to be a busy – I mean, I'd imagine they get this thing done by the end of the week. I don't know. That's just my
opinion. Yeah. I've been given some timelines, but I don't think – whoever the next head coach is going to be is going to have some time to do what we were talking about. Talk to the current players, settle them, talk to Dylan Mingo, talk to Maximo Adams, those guys, and give them a pretty good indication of where they stand. So they know when the portal opens, whether or not to enter their name. They need that as well as the head coach and the program do. So they've given a year or more to the school. So they need to know where their future is. So I think there will be enough time to do that. I can't give a specific date right now because I don't know, but there'll be enough time for all those conversations to be had. So when the portal opens the day after the title game, Carolina basketball and its players, current players, can hit the ground running in whatever direction they're going to go.
And so I want to ask about, I've heard some rumblings of Henry Vissar. Have they sat down with Henry and are they trying to hammer some things out early for him? That's what I heard. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll tell you this much. I put this on the board already, so I'll say this. Henry is very interested in testing the waters for the NBA. And I think it'll be really interesting how he does in his individual workouts. And you know the grind they put guys through in the individual workouts and then how they match that with the film that they see. It depends on who they hire. But if Henry's not guaranteed first round, I've been told that he would probably stay in college, but he would only play at North Carolina. Now, this is before the Hubert stuff. But let's say they hire, for the sake of discussion, someone like Billy Donovan. He could sit down with Henry and say, I know exactly what you need to do because I just coached that.
Mm-hmm.
So you work with me for a year. A, we're going to win a ton of games. And B, I'm going to get you ready. You have 1 year, like in an NBA training camp, essentially to get ready for the league. And also, he's getting married this summer. So you don't know how that affects some of the decisions that he makes. But there is an interest on Henry's side in coming back, and he would only come back to North Carolina is what I've been told.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good piece to build around if that's what you're going to build around.
I mean, he's a pro. When I watch him, he's a pro. I don't necessarily know, you know, NBA wise, how long he may play, but I think he's an NBA player. And if he doesn't play in the NBA, he's going to be a EuroLeague guy making millions, in my opinion. So hopefully, if it doesn't work out for the first round, the problem is end of the first round, you're still getting a nice little contract these days. Back in the day, it wasn't like that, but it'll be interesting to see the draft process. I think he does what Pettiford does. I think he goes to the draft process, maybe plays in a game for a day or two, see how he shakes out. If it doesn't work out, or you could do the Pettiford, increase my NIL valuation, and then get up out of here. So,
and what's interesting now, I'm glad you said that because I'm sure you've heard this as well. The NIL potential, if no change made, wasn't going to be significant. It wasn't going to be as much money. Mm. now the money's going to be there. So Henry can make more money next year in Chapel Hill than he would make in the NBA next year. But he's also going to be 23 then when he would come out. So that might affect where teams draft him. Although a guy like him probably is better off going the back end anyway if he wants to go to a team that can win and will know how to use him right away instead of being put in a situation where they're putting a whole lot on him and he might not be ready for. So, because don't you think he probably would be a guy that could play 10 or 12 years and have a maybe be a starter, but have like a sixth or seventh man role, first big off the bench and still play 25 minutes a night? Can't you envision something like that for him?
I mean, that was kind of my career, spot starter, right? I started a couple of years, didn't start a couple of years, played for the most part 18 to 25 minutes a game, had a nice career, you know. So
how many years did you play?
I did eight.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, no, sure. And so I like I said, and then his skill set, I think, just matches the NBA so well. I bet someone would fall in love with him in a draft process, especially in the back end, like, you know, a team that, you know, like Spurs or somebody, you know, type organization that just, you know, obviously got Wimby, but he would be, I mean, think about him with the Spurs, right? Like,
yeah. Wow. He's going to interview well too.
Yeah.
He's going to win the interview. In fact, this roster has a lot of kids that will, but he's going to win the interview. Just like Caleb. Caleb's going to absolutely crush it in the interview.
Yeah,
Caleb's a different dude, man.
I hear that all the time. Like, you know, this roster, great kids. Like, we always laugh with some of my older teammates. Like, man, you need some guys with a little moxie to them. Because look, we had a good team, but, you know, Coach Williams, we had some days where, you know, we had to, you know, Coach Williams had to rein us in, but it was for the best. So,
your junior year, that was one of the better teams I've covered as far as just guys that could speak on their own and speak confidently.
Yeah.
Cause, you know, I go in the locker room, I go from Harrison's going to say it like, he's going to call it like it is.
Yeah.
Go to Tyler. Tyler's going to call it like it is. You never BS'd. So you could walk out the locker room and know exactly what the team thinks. There are teams I've covered where you have no idea when you walk out the locker room. And usually the better teams are the more ones that you have the better interviews, cause they're just the more confident kids.
We just weren't afraid. Like I'll never forget it, you know? And then so we're running a play. I'm like, Kendall, like, we don't need to run that. He's like, shut the F up and run the F and play that I called. All right. Like, but you know, that was that's how we operated. It wasn't personal. Like, we were trying to win. Right. So that was kind of, and Harrison, hey, look, like, you're not playing hard. I don't care. Like, you're not playing hard. Or, you know, Big Z, like, nah, we're not doing, like, so it was, it was a good squad, man. I still talk to all those guys too. So I'm gonna let you go, man. I know you've been busy the last 24 hours. I appreciate you. Thank you for coming on. This is a dope episode, and I'm sure we'll be back on to discuss certain things and potential hires and the hire whenever he comes on.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on. I always enjoy talking with you, and I can talk about the 2012 team and 11, that great run you guys made, any day of the week.
That was the most fun year of my college career because no one expected us to do that. So that was
you guys took off. Very quick story about that, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. Ashley Judd, y'all played Kentucky in the regional final. Mm-hmm. She was right behind me, and she was screaming at you guys the whole time. She was calling you string bean. String bean, call the foul on the string bean. I was like, man, she must have been pounding some drinks because she sounded inebriated. I'm only kidding with that. I don't want to get any trouble on that one.
But it was I go back to that game and I say, I always give Coach Kyle his flowers because DeAndre Liggins turned down a three and Coach Kyle literally said, if you turn down another effing three, you'll never play for me again in your effing life. He shot the next one, closed his eyes, went in, we lose.
Yeah.
That's coaching.
That coaching. Big kid had his game of his life against you guys that day,
too. Oh, yes, he did.
That's the best game that dude ever played. Came Harrelson? At the right time.
Harrelson?
Yeah.
We kind of overlooked him. I ain't going to lie to you. I was upset about that one. But, all right, appreciate you.
All right, absolutely,
my friend. Thank you for watching on YouTube and listening wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to check out TarHill247.com for the latest wall-to-wall coverage of Carolina athletics. We will see you soon, potentially with a new coach.